Blog Talk Radio.
I'm running away from this pain. I'm trying to find a new way where the sun's shining down on my face. I'm running away. You're in a toxic relationship. Time to be
from the Blog Talk Radio studios in Union City, New Jersey. This is Digging Today with Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for joining us. It's the 1st of May. My God, where's the year going? Here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank you again for listening from wherever and however you are here in the good old U.S. of A. Folks, this week's edition of Digging Today is brought to you by the Mason Civic League. Folks are a wonderful local nonprofit here in New Jersey that I'm proud to partner with. And you can smile online at their website by going to www.masoncivic.org. You can visit their office Monday through Friday from 9 until 5 p.m. by going to 1200 Washington Street in Hoboken, New Jersey. You can also reach them at their direct line, 201-706-8088. Once again, 201-706-8088. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Now, for those of you who are not aware, the Mason Civic League was established in 2010 by former Hoboken Councilwoman, the distinguished Beth Mason, and her husband, Ricky Mason. And the Mason Civic League has assisted community members and groups in need throughout Hudson County. They sponsor programs and events to promote the arts, continuing education, and activities for residents of all ages. They're a wonderful local nonprofit, folks. If you're looking to do something meaningful and great by volunteering your time this summer, for any of my students, past or present, or anybody looking just to make a difference in our community, do me a favor, do it with the Mason Civic League. Again, check them out, www.masoncivic.org. That's what I announced here on the program. Some great sites here. First of all, cromcakes.com, a great local media site. You can check it out by going to www.cromcakes.com. It's K as in knife, R-O-M-C-A-K-E-S.com. And it's hosted by my dear friend, the lovely Ashley Cromcakes. It's full of entertaining blogs, and it does connect media with humanity. Of course, it sprinkles some cromedy along the way. So do check out cromcakes.com. I also want to acknowledge here on the program, folks, Rough Rehab, a great local no-kill Northern New Jersey-based animal rescue shelter. It's located at 360 Route 46 in Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. You can dial directly 862-200-1447. They're open to the public daily from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. Check out the website www.roughrehab.org. It's RUSSREHAB.org. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Folks, again, the toll-free hotline to call in tonight, because I want to hear from you, is 646-649-1926. Once again, the toll-free number tonight brought to you by the Mason Civic League. Again, folks, check them out at www.masoncivic.org. It is indeed 646-649-1926. If you want to write to the show's inbox, please, I want to hear from you. ProfessorFUJ@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @GloriousFUJ, and also follow me on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Folks, hope you had a wonderful weekend. Started May today, and it's my favorite month. My birthday coming up on May the 17th, so I'm very excited. And, of course, this past Friday, you'll be happy to know, my annual March of Dimes charity event titled Fernando Uribe is Saving Babies, the 2017 edition, did remarkably well. We had over 100 guests last week at Son Cubano along the waterfront in Western New Jersey. We also we raised over $3,000 between online donations and donations made that evening throughout the evening, of course, with raffle tickets being purchased and, of course, you know, date auction. So I can't say enough about my lovely contestants who all participated and really helped out, though. Again, they include Nicole, Lauren, Kim, Alexandra, Stephanie, and, of course, Karen. I don't want to mention their last names out of respect for their privacy, but, ladies, thank you so much for helping me and obviously surpassing them by a large margin, of course, helping me become a top walker again in Hudson County for the 8th consecutive year. I would have never thought that when I first started volunteering for the March of Dimes in 2009 when it was just a simple event in New York City with about 50 people, and we raised maybe almost a little over $1,000. So it was a great time. And again, this past Friday, it was beautiful weather, great turnout, great music, great crowd. Again, I can't thank everybody enough, especially Son Guano, the ownership there, Alex and Eddie Durant, respectively, the management, all my guests. It was just a great time. And again, I can't say enough for how great of an event it was. It was a great way to close out April, and now we start May. So, folks, again, thank you for tuning in tonight to the program. From wherever you are here in the good old U.S. of A, again, all the way in Raleigh, North Carolina. We got some friends out in Boston, Massachusetts listening tonight. Some friends out in Dallas, Texas, one of my favorite cities in the entire U.S. All the way out in Las Vegas and all the way out in Bakersfield, California. As a matter of fact, I actually had some new listeners tonight listening in South Orange, New Jersey. Some of my current students this semester showing their support, letting me know that you're listening tonight. So big shout out to all my great students at Seton Hall University for supporting their favorite professor and this podcast. So, again, shout out to all of the Seton Hall Pirates listening this evening here on Blog Talk Radio. All right, folks. Again, hope you had a wonderful weekend. April showers, hopefully bring May flowers. Again, the pollen count hopefully won't kill me because, you know, I sort of from hay fever just like everybody else here, I'm sure, in the tri-state area. So hopefully you'll do well, as they say, in these pollen-rich days here in the month of May. Well, folks, you know, tonight I wanted to sort of cover a topic that is, I think, near and dear to my heart for a lot of guys, even for a lot of women as well. Talked to some friends over the past few days and sort of just changing some stories and my friends sharing stories with me and sort of disclosing some things in terms of how certain relationships for, you know, a variety of different reasons. It's one of those things that, but anyway, it's funny that I look at the dating scene here in the New York City area. It's really no different than, it's really no different than I think anywhere else in the U.S. Friends of mine all throughout the country that are exploring the dating scene and, how tough it is. You know, it's to meet quality people. At any age, whether it's 40 now or even your 30s or your 20s, it's hard to. It's hard to meet quality and find, you know, quality companionship. Sometimes we do it ourselves. Sometimes we doom ourselves by our actions. Sometimes we don't invest in as much of us as possible. We don't of maybe trying to be better. It's one of those things that it can be frustrating. You know, I've had friends of mine tell me about, overbearing sort of mates and companions and things of that nature. And sometimes, you know, listen, I'll be very fair also. As guys, I think more times than not, sometimes we give the women that we date excessive headaches, maybe headaches that they don't deserve, headaches that they don't need and stuff like that. So I'm more than willing to own up to that. I think as a guy, I know I've given a fair share of women in my lifetime plenty of headaches. But by the same token, I think I've dated a decent amount of women that are more than capable of giving headaches themselves. So it's always a tricky situation. And it's funny, you know, thinking about it today. And tonight's topic is sort of something that hopefully will resonate with both my male and my female listeners. And it sort of gets me thinking about, you know, we finally meet that person who seems to be perfect, and it's sort of easy to get sucked into the romance of it all. You know, you might think that the way that he or she's handling themselves is charming and it's endearing, you know, and you're really happy to have someone pay attention to you, and they shower you with not necessarily gifts, but a lot of attention, and they care enough about you to check up on you every day. You know, and don't get me wrong, these things are definitely very sweet. and you deserve to feel like someone who is worth the time. You deserve to feel like someone who matters and is a priority. And, you know, that's wonderful. And I'll be the first one to tell you that, you know, in my dating history, I've dated women who have been openly attentive to me. You know, one of the things that I've learned, you know, finish up the book here, is I've been working on some other projects, but I haven't neglected the book here in terms of dating today and trying to get this done, and sort of doing some revisions, you know, just recalling some things that I may have omitted from the book and maybe I need to insert to make sure that it flows. You know, one of the things that has always come to define me is I certainly welcome the attention from the woman that I'm dating. I think it's important to feel wanted. It's important to feel loved. It's important to feel, I think sought after. But there's always a limit, and I think that sometimes when you're dating certain types of women, I think that there are certain women that I think guys too. I don't want to sort of just, you know, piss on women tonight. I think both men and women can be very guilty of these behaviors. But sometimes there's a limit. You know, a guy or a girl might do things that appear to be upon first glance, but when you take a closer look, you realize that, you know, here's just controlling. And some of the things, you know, and I'll talk about this tonight. And again, I'll hear from you folks, 646-1926, and toll free number about specifically. Again, www.masoncivic.org. Again, 646-649-1926. Me tonight, folks, about this topic. Again, maybe you're disagreeing with us, but you'll enjoy the insight tonight. And I was saying, you know, when you take a closer look, sometimes you just realize that he or she's just being controlling. And these things can include being overly possessive or acting like you needing your alone time is unrealistic or unreasonable or unacceptable. And tonight what I want to share with my listeners, both male and female, to really pay attention to the red flags I'm going to share with you tonight. First and foremost, I think it's, you know, it's cute when he or she wants to get to know your friends. It's controlling when he or she's asking them where you are or trying to sort of be, I think, very, invasive with your friends. And one of the things I've always learned about dating, and I think when it comes, you know, I think dating myself, I've always taken pride, I want to sort of great length to think about exactly, you know, how important it is, you know, for your significant other to be not accepted by your friends, but to sort of be welcomed by your friends, that there's at least some sort of harmonious relationship. And, you know, one of the things that I've always learned is I think that I've always made an effort, I think, to sort of endear myself to, my significant other's friends over the years. I can think of different women I've dated over the years, and I've met some really, and excuse my language, I met some really shitty human beings when it comes to friends of the woman that I've dated over time, you know. I can think of my most recent ex. I mean, she had some of the shittiest people as friends. And I'm talking about some of these women were just downright just, you know, I think, I'm trying to be nice. I don't want to slander to her, but not very bright, but I think at the same time, just very judgmental, very critical, overly hypocritical. And that was sort of hard to deal with, you know. It was tough to sort of deal with that. Had some friends that were decent people, that were nice, you know, or I thought they were, or at least I thought they were reasonable and rational. But more times than not, there was a good amount of friends that were just absolute garbage as human beings, whether the way they conducted themselves, the way they spoke. And I always made a point to really work hard to endear myself, because no matter how hard I tried, I was never going to be good enough, or I was never, there was always going to be something wrong with me. So, you know, I'm always of the type of, you know, I'm going to treat you the way you treat me. You're going to go out of your way to be an outright bitch. I can be the biggest asshole on the planet, and I can, you know, I can jab with the best of them. So that's always been a challenge for me, I think. Looking back in previous relationships, I remember relationship before that, before the last, you know, I think by and large, her friends were pretty good. You had one friend that was just an obnoxious communist who, quite frankly, if she was walking down the street and got hit by a bus, I wouldn't miss her. Or if at least, you know, if I saw the bus coming, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, watch out. Like, I'd make sure not to, like, maybe look the other way. But I'd check my text messages at that moment just to sort of ignore the incident. But anyway, you know, I think that getting to know your companion's friends are important. I think that, you know, you don't spend a large amount of time together. There are going to be instances and moments when you are going to cross paths, whether it's at a birthday party, like for example with me. You know, I host charity events, so when I do, you know, my friends do come out, and my significant other is going to be there. And, you know, one of the things that I've always, again, taken a lot of pride in is just, you know, being someone that tries to endear myself, I think, to who I'm dating. I'm hoping that whoever I'm dating tries to endear themselves to my friends. Now, I think, you know, and I love my buddies. They can not always be the easiest bunch of guys to like. They can be a little rowdy. They can be a little crazy. You know, you get a few drinks in them, they can be obnoxious sometimes. And listen, don't get me wrong, I love them to death. And this isn't, you know, a criticism of them. This isn't a character assassination of them either. But, you know, I'm also realistic. I'm realistic of the fact that they're guys, and they're not always going to behave well in front of my significant others. They're not always going to make good choices in front of them, stuff like that. But, you know, by and large, they're my buddies. And, you know, one of the things that I've always taken considerable pride in is the fact that, you know, I'm not judgmental. I'm far from perfect. I know that my buddies are. I know that my buddies have made their fair share of mistakes in their lives, like myself. And I never judge them. I just, you know, I respect the fact that, you know, that they're supportive of me, that they have my back, that they don't belittle me or has judgment on me, that they're just there, that they're there to say, hey, Fernando, man, you know, we love you. No matter how many times you mess up, man, we got your back, and, you know, we'll walk, you know, we'll be in the foxhole with you, you know, we'll go to battle with you, man. And I think as a guy, and again, I think perhaps maybe women conceptualize it differently. As guys, you know, that's huge. Sort of have that camaraderie, to have sort of that unity and that bond. I think it goes to that the element of just unity and that bond that guys develop, you know, that brotherhood, I think that the guys do. You know, and more times than not, you know, it's important that my partner likes them, that I can find a way to get along with them. But I think more than anything, it's important that whoever I'm dating gets along with my female friends, my close female friends. I have three very close female friends, all a little bit different in age. I have my one friend, Marilyn, who is almost 30. She just turned 20. You know, she's a very good friend of mine. She can be painless. She's very close to me and very supportive, and I adore her for that. I mean, she can be a huge pain in my ass, blows up my phone at all times of the day and night sometimes. And, you know, I get it. I don't just do that malice, but, you know, at the end of the day, I know she has my back and she's very supportive. So, you know, whenever I'm dating someone, it's important that they meet Marilyn. You know, Marilyn sometimes is a little tough to take at first, you know, and I warn whoever I'm dating, like, you know, Marilyn's a work in progress. And I don't expect to like her right away. She could be a bit, you know, that's the way I sort of sell her to whoever I'm dating. And this is, then I have, you know, my friend Emma, who is my BFF, I would say, and certainly a woman who's my age and has three boys, married, love her husband, love her three sons. One of them happens to be my godson, so I love them deeply. I love them all deeply. But she's important, you know. She recently, for many years, she was always here. For years, she always lived in New Jersey, and whenever I dated different types of women over the years, she was always around. So it was always possible to go and introduce her to whoever I'm dating, and, you know, get her acclimated. And, you know, Pammy has that sort of bully, you know, side to her. So I think Pammy always came off as very warm and very, again, very enduring. So that was always great. And of course, I have my current who's also one of my, for example, we've been friends for over 10 years, going back to when we first started grad school at Rutgers. And you know, she's very different. She's a very different type of friend for me. Not just because we're very different politically and ideologically, but you know, she's an attorney, and you know, certainly, and she's a great attorney for my foundation. You know, when she does the work she's supposed to be doing. But you know, I value her opinion. She's someone who's very important to me. She's someone whose opinion and counsel that I hold in very high regard, because she has a good head on her shoulders. She does. You know, she's one of my more mature friends. I know that when I talk to her, she's going to set me straight. She's going to tell me what I don't want to hear sometimes. She's going to tell me, not necessarily what I want to hear, but she's going to tell me what I need to hear to sort of be better as a person. And, you know, over time, you know, when I'm dating someone, it's important that, you know, my companion get along with her and him and anybody in the group. And that's important. You know, I think it's one of those things that, you know, but I think when your partner is trying to sort of be overly controlling about your friends and, you know, which ones are good, which ones are bad, and which ones you shouldn't hang out with, or which ones you shouldn't talk to, I think that's overbearing. I think it's just controlling. You know, what I've always told my girlfriends over the years is, you know, my buddies are my buddies. You know, whatever they do with their lives, as long as they're not breaking the law or hurting someone physically or mentally or emotionally, you know, I'm going to have their back. Just like they have mine. So to sort of be overly critical and overly judgmental, like, that's not cool. And I think that's sort of showing a side of being very controlling. And I've been in previous relationships and with previous exes, you know, and it's not nice. It's not pretty. You feel like you're fighting a woman battle all the time. And that's not always, and that's exhausting. And that's laborious. It's exhausting, you know? But it's something to keep an eye out in terms of a red flag. You know, I think another thing that probably is important for you to sort of keep an eye out for is, you know, I think, you know, listen, it's cute when he or she's jealous of someone of the opposite sex in your life. It's controlling when he or she wants you to stop meeting, you know, or talking to every friend of yours that's of the opposite sex. And, you know, it's frustrating because I remember that one of my biggest issues and complaints, I think, with previous relationships, even my most recent relationship, I think, was the fact that I think by and large, my friends may not have always gone out of their way, I think, to warm up to my ex. But by the same token, and I'm glad she actually kind of admitted this to me towards the end of our demise, but that she maybe didn't go out of her way to be as warm as possible and sort of blamed it on, like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm shy and I don't really, if I don't have things in common with someone, it's kind of hard for me to talk to anybody. And I just always thought of that as a lame excuse, because you're a human being. Like, you can find something to talk about. You can be comfortable. You can be sociable somehow. You can talk about anything, movies, music, TV, something. I always thought of that as a cop-out. And I think when, you know, they're giving you grief about, what friends you have, or especially if they're of the opposite sex, you know, it can be annoying. It can be really annoying. It can be bothersome. It could be smothering. That's just not cool at all. You know, one of those things that it sort of leads me to sort of hear that you should really be made aware of is the fact that very much the same way I think that he or she can be overly guarded or overly sort of territorial about spending time with your friends, not like overwhelmingly, but, you know, on a reasonable rate or something, is, listen, it's cute when he or she wants to spend time with you because, listen, when you're dating someone, you want to see them. Not just for the typical, you know, you want to get laid, but it's because you enjoy doing things. You know, it's cute when he or she wants to spend time with you. It's controlling when he or she doesn't respect your need to be alone or doesn't respect your need to maybe go out with your buddies once in a while or to meet up with a friend for coffee, you know, a friend that, you know, you have to bond with, you know, and that can be problematic. You know, there might be factors that contribute to that clash and that conflict, you know, maybe there are trust issues there, and maybe and maybe they're, and certainly if they're warranted, okay, I get it. You know, if they're warranted, it's one of those things that's unpleasant. You know, if it's not warranted, then you know, you should get the transfer to work through that. But it could be that's something that, you know, I always get clashes with. I remember with my parents about this topic because, you know, I love my parents, but I mean they're a little antiquated in the sense of, you know, if you're in a relationship, the fact of just, you know, going out with your friends to watch a ball game or going out with your friends to a happy hour or just being out with your friends, well, that's not acceptable, that's not cool, blah, blah. Well, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, like having alone time, I think, with yourself, I think is important. I think if you're able to create, not a barrier, but some sort of separation, I think, from your partner, I think is important. I think you should be able to appreciate your alone time and if you can feel productive about doing things, you know, but when you have a partner that's going to be completely up your ass at all times of the day, that can be problematic. So it's, I think it's important to sort of, you know, differentiate the two. I think probably, you know, another warning sign I was thinking about today as I was just doing your my notes here for today. I don't know. It's something about, you know, it's cute when he or she wants to know more about you. But let's be very honest, too, and I've heard about this because I have friends of mine that told me this. You know, it's controlling when he or she is trying to check your text or your emails. Now, in fairness, if your partner has a legitimate concern about you and your trustworthiness, I understand that that's inevitable. And that they feel the need to check your text and your phone and feel that they're within their providence to do that. And I get that, you know. I think if you've given your partner a reason to doubt you or another trust you, that's one of the casualties of the circumstances. But I think it gets to a point where I get it, you know, sometimes, you know, trust takes a long time to build back. When you have, you know, a history maybe with your partner where trust has become an issue, it's become sort of a point of contention. I get all that, but it's exhausting, you know, and I remember, you know, telling my attorney a couple stories about exes in recent years saying, well, you know, they felt they need to check my phone and they had the need to check an email or check whatever. And it was funny because when I, you know, was confronted on some things, you know, harmless things, things that I was doing wrong, even that got scrutiny. And I understand, you know, when there was, I deserve scrutiny, absolutely get that, you know, I totally deserve it. I'm not going to lie about it. You know, it's, you know, it's funny where, you know, sometimes we'd have arguments about it. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you sit there and you're like, okay, well, I get it. You know, up to what point does the sort of the constant monitoring and the checking continue? I get that. You know, how long does that continue for? And it's one of those things where, you know, there comes a point in that relationship where, you know, how exhausting is it to have to try to be all over someone and be constantly checking everything about them? I get that. You know, you keep them in check. You want to keep them in line, make sure that they're not deviating from anything. I get all that. But, you know, it's one of those things where at some point that it has to stop, you know. We have to try to just, you know, work together and, you know, try not to fall into those traps of that, you know, of being, you know, sort of like a watchdog or being, you know, or conducting constant surveillance. I think it's exhausting. It can be absolutely draining, you know. So it's something I think that, you know, you have to try to, as a couple, I think, work through. Another thing also that sort of comes to mind is, you know, it's cute when, you know, it's cute when he or she wants you to spend time with his or her family. I get that. But it's also controlling when this person wants to isolate you from your own family. And, you know, it sort of reminded me because some years ago, I remember, I dated a woman who was very territorial about her family. And while I enjoyed spending time with her, I also enjoyed spending time with my family. And I always made it a point to, I think, bring her around my family. See, one of the biggest elements for me in my dating life has been, you know, not that I need my parents' acceptance about who I'm dating, because I dated plenty of women my parents have never approved of. And I'll continue to do that, unfortunately. I think seems to be the pattern for many years. But it's funny because, you know, at the end of the day, when I'm dating someone long enough, I like for them to meet my parents. I want them to sort of endear themselves to my parents and speak with them and interact with them and call them on their birthday and be warm and friendly. I mean, I'm not a fan of my parents having a very chummy relationship with my significant other. I don't need them to be talking on the phone or texting or having that sort of rapport like that per se. But, you know, I think you all know what I'm referring to. I think you understand that there can be a healthy relationship that your partner can have with your parents, and then one that just seems to border on the, I don't know, it seems like overly territorial. And, you know, what our families think a lot of times matters to us, folks. You know, I'm a grown-ass man, and I know that my parents have always respected who I've dated. They may not like her over the years. I know that there have been plenty of women. I can tell you right now, probably of the last 5 women that I've dated, I probably can say that they genuinely and legitimately liked maybe 2 of them, 2 out of the last 5. As a matter of fact, I remember my last 2 relationships that my parents knew of and that they got to know because I dated each woman for a certain amount of time. You know, I consider my parents really, really liked them, even loved them at some point, you know. Other women prior to that, they weren't such big fans of, you know. They would say, all right, well, she's hot and she's, you know, good looking, and if she's nice to you and she treats you well, friend, then we're happy, you know. But we have these concerns about her. And I think that they wouldn't be good parents if they weren't sharing those concerns. So, you know, I applaud my parents. I applaud them greatly for that. You know, I love them for wanting to watch out for me, you know, not to sort of let me, you know, fall into a bad situation with the wrong woman. And it was interesting because I remember that, you know, I always found my parents' approval, to some extent, I think, important. You know, at the end of the day, I'm going to date whoever I want. I'm going to date whoever I feel comfortable with. There might be some issues that my parents disagree with in terms of how I handle my relationships or what the woman does during the relationship that maybe that doesn't sit well with them. I think overall they've always been very supportive. What I've always tried to do, again, is to acclimate myself to some extent, I think, to my significant other's parents, I think, to try hard. To sort of, you know, warm up to them. It's really interesting. I remember that in the last relationships, I think that, you know, my last ex, you know, mom and I didn't really get along very well, but I don't know why. It's, you know, I think maybe I should have tried harder to be a little warmer, but I never found a reason to. I just never found like there was like, some way to gel with her. And that's just unfortunate. You know, it is what it is. I know my previous relationship before her, I think our mom and I got along very well. We used to text all the time, and even though she lived out of state, you know, we found a way to sort of keep in touch every month and chat. And, you know, we had a good relationship, even with her dad, what I had the chance to meet, you know, lived in Florida with her. And then before that, you know, it was the same thing sort of, you know, I think I got along pretty decently with my ex's mom and stuff like that. So, you know, getting along with family is important, you know, and trying to acclimate yourself to your partner's family, I think, is something that you should try for. However, again, I think you should sort of look up, he or she's trying to, you know, isolate you from your own family. That's a red flag you have to really address early on. You know, it's funny, you know, when I think about that, and it sort of, you know, it gets me thinking about as a relationship, you know, how you get with your partner. And, you know, something else that comes to mind sort of, you know, it's cute when he or she gets emotional with you, you know, but it's controlling when he or she guilt trips you about anything in your life. And that's not cool. You have to sort of hang things over your head or to be vindictive and to be petty. That's not healthy. incident. And I remember, many instances in my life where I've dealt with women like that, and it's just not, it's not healthy. Something that I think over time, when you start processing, I think it generates a lot of resentment, and it generates a lot of, you know, animosity, I think, for the person you're dating when they're doing that. And that's, you know, I've never looked at myself as someone who's petty or vindictive or vengeful. That's not someone who I am. But when you're dating someone like that, and it can be exhausting. It can be exhausting. Like, oh my God, like, it's, you know, and the worst thing is when they don't realize that they're doing it, or they can find a way to justify and rationalize, like, completely irrational behavior that's vindictive and then that's petty and that is completely vengeful and, you know, just harmful. That takes its toll. That takes its toll, you know. And again, you know, it's one of those things where I was in my 20s and I dated women who were in their 20s. You can sort of accept that because you're dealing with a woman that's not very mature. But when you're dating someone who's older or right around your age group and they're still engaging that sort of behavior, you know, this idea that women mature faster than men, well, when you see behavior like that, that's not the case. And I can point, you know, I can cite chapter and verse, plenty of psychology journals that will tell you that. But, you know, that sort of immature behavior, you expect that from a 27-year-old woman, which I have because I dated many younger women in my life, and that's just something I've always done, and it's fine. I don't regret that. But when you're dating someone who's older or even around your age group and they're still engaging in behavior like that, that's a serious problem, you know, and that's something that I think you have to sort of, you know, look out for that as a red flag. It's sort of, you know, it's interesting how that comes about in a relationship. You know, it's interesting how that presents itself, you know. It can be frustrating. It can be problematic. It can be, you know, it can be just something that causes a rift. And it's just, I don't know. You know, I sort of look back in my dating history and I sort of look back on, you know, trying to differentiate, you know, like acknowledging the major difference when he or she's being adorable and cute and then when he or she's trying to control you. And, you know, we think about what these red flags mean. It's always important to, like, sort of keep them in the back of your mind. It's always important to listen to your gut when it comes to these sort of red flags. And listen, I'll be the first one to tell you, I'm not the easiest person to date. I know this. I have spoken with different type of professionals to sort of, you know, get an understanding exactly of how to be a better person. I've read plenty of books that have been very beneficial to me in terms of being a better person. The one thing I've noticed consistently that has always been a bit of an issue, I think, is the fact that, you know, dating someone is work. Having a good relationship and keeping it happy and keeping it harmonious is work. It is. I think both people have to want it. Both people have to be willing to put in the time to work at it. And it's funny when, you know, I look back at past relationships and you know, I think we live in a time where you know, age doesn't really become the variable it used to be. You know, I think if you were a man or a woman, you reach a certain age, and let's say you weren't married or didn't have kids yet, there's a certain stigma that was attached to you. And I think those days are gone. I think that those days are gone to some extent, I think, for men and women. I think if you're a man at 40 or above and you're still not married and you're still a bachelor and you have no kids, you know, yes, there might be somewhat of a stigma against you. But it's nowhere near as overwhelming as a woman. You know, if you're 40 and you're a woman and you haven't had a kid yet, and you're not in any sort of long-term relationship and you are possibly not working towards having a kid, that could carry a certain negative connotation and a certain negative stigma. Not to say it's fair. It's not fair at all. I know some friends of mine that are in that position, and it's not for them. They're great women. They're friends of mine that I know. And, you know, they don't deserve the negative stigma. There are some that are 40 or older and, you know, you just know that as women, they're you know, no one's gonna put up with that. No one's gonna put up with that behavior. No one's gonna put up with that lifestyle or temperament or outlandish behavior or pettiness or stuff like that. It's just not gonna happen. And it's funny that I think as a society, you know, we look at these personality types and say, well, okay, you know, whatever happens, happens. And, you know, I've sort of come to grips with the reality of, you know, whatever God has in plans, has in store for me, or whatever God's plan is, you know, I'm willing to respect it. You know, I very much want to be a dad, for example, and I'm very much very eager to be a dad. I think I'd be a good dad by all accounts of people that have told me, people that I have come into contact with that have children, that I interact with their children, you know, I'd be a great dad. That day will come, I hope, you know, hopefully not before I'm too old. But the reality is that I think when you're dating, you try to look at what is the best partner you can try to find. And, you know, some of the signs I share with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, are signs that we probably come across all the time when we're dating today. You know, excuse the pun, I know it's the title of the show, but I feel it's really something that we don't always take into consideration. As I said, you know, sometimes we don't keep an eye on these red flags. We sort of, you know, forget about it because we're sort of, you know, enamored with the romance of a relationship early on. And, you know, we're very invested in our partner. And sometimes we tend to take some of these red flags and just forget about them. So I think that it's important to keep it in mind, I think, to keep it in mind, you know, and what I would say tonight, if you've, when you look at dating, you look at some of these signs, you know, I want you to really take a good look at yourself first and say, okay, well, am I committing any of these behaviors? Am I engaging in any of these behaviors? Never mind what your partner's doing. Try to make sure that you're not doing them. And try to be the best person you can be when you're dating someone, you know? Try to be the best partner you can for the person you're dating. And again, for the guys and girls listening tonight, I hope that you know, this evening's discussion, I think, goes a long way. I'm going to break down exactly what, you know, you should look forward to in a relationship, you know, what you should steer very clear of and what you should embrace. And that's really, like I said, you know, I think it's important that that we keep that in mind, that we keep that in perspective when it comes to dating. And again, I think, you know, at the first sign of a red flag, boom, we should jump ship now. You know, dating's, as I've said to you before, dating's process. You know, when you're getting into a relationship and you're with someone that you really enjoy spending time with, it's work. You know, you're not always going to agree on everything. You're not always going to get along. You're not always going, it's not always going to be peachy and harmonious. You have some turbulent times, you have some difficult times, but it's really about how you as two people can work through those tough times. Again, folks, it's really great when you're sailing the boat and it's very clear waters, but when you hit some storms and some rough waters, man, that's when you got to sort of put the pedal to the metal and show where you stand in the relationship. So regardless of whatever I've talked about tonight in terms of warning signs, you know, whether or not your partner is, you know, being cute or being controlling, you know, understand always you have to put your best effort forward as well. You know, a relationship is always about 50-50. So think about that. Again, if you are approaching a relationship status with someone right now, and if you're not, you know, keep it in mind for the future. All right, folks, again, I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. Again, it's wow, the show goes by quickly. You know, again, I want to thank my listeners for always tuning in each and every week here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank my sponsor, my dedicated sponsor here, the Mason Civic League. Folks, you can check them out online, www.masoncivic.org. You can visit their office Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. by going to 1200 Washington Street in Hoboken, New Jersey. You can dial them directly at 201-706-8088. Don't forget to like them on Facebook. And, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Again, for those of you who are not aware, the Mason Civic League was established in 2010 by former Hoboken councilwoman, the distinguished Beth Mason, and her husband, Ricky Mason. And what they've done is assist community members and groups in need while sponsoring programs and events to promote the arts, continuing education, and activities for residents of all ages in Hudson County, specifically in the Hoboken area. They're a great local nonprofit. I hope you'd want to get involved with them because I am, and they're doing great things here in the community. So again, make sure you like them on Facebook, and of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. So I want to acknowledge the folks on the program, folks here tonight, Cromcakes.com, a great local media site. You can check it out, www.cromcakes.com. That's K as in knife, R-O-M-C-A-K-E-S.com. It's full of entertaining blogs, while connecting media with humanity, and of course, sprinkling some comedy along the way. Make sure you follow my dear friend Ashley Cromcakes on Instagram and also on Twitter. Last but not least, I want to acknowledge here on the program, folks, Rough Rehab, an excellent no-kill Northern New Jersey-based animal rescue shelter located at 360 Route 46 in Mountain Lakes, New Jersey. They're open to the public daily, 10 a.m. until 6 p.m., and you can reach out to them at their direct line, 862-200-1447. Check out their website, www.roughrehab.org. That's R-U-F-F-R-E-H-A-B.org. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. So, again, folks, I want to thank Rough Rehab, CromCakes.com for being supportive of the show, and, of course, the Mason Civic League for sponsoring the best dating advice you'll find anywhere online, folks, each and every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/dating today. So again, for all my students this week studying for final exams, study hard, and then you get to party hard all summer long. Have a good one, folks. Good night. Cleveland, Ohio, the home of the reigning and defending NBA champions, start off their Eastern Conference semifinal in the best of seven tonight, game one, with a very impressive win against the Toronto Raptors. So again, folks, five down, 11 to go to repeat as NBA champs here. So my regards to everybody in the land over in Northeast. And as always, stay classy, everyone.
I'm running away from this pain. I'm trying to find a new way where the sun's shining down on my face. I'm running away. You're in a
Thank you.